It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. Now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Hey, this is Caffeinated Comics. I am your host, John Clark. With me is 89% always is my co-host.
It's going to be 100% soon.
Oh, I know. Well, you just have to never miss one ever
again. I'm trying really hard.
What you need to do is when I have a Skype cast with somebody, you just sit on my shoulder.
And just sit there.
Like Flava Flav. Just not even listen. Just go, yeah, yeah.
I'll just agree with things. Yeah, that's awesome.
It's boy, just every couple of minutes.
But like.
And that'll get you to 100%. Yeah. And then it's like having 100% health points.
Maybe I'll start doing Skype calls. I'm going to call some people.
That'd be great. I could take a week off.
Oh, there you go.
You talk
to
some
people. Yeah, there you go. You should get a week off. I'm Stephen Brown, by the way.
And this is the first time we've had a four-man podcast. We have actually two experts. We completely missed Horror Month. Usually in October, we do a lot of horror-themed stuff. And there was nothing but goddamn news all through October.
You know what, though? If we were getting paid, we wouldn't have missed it.
If we were getting paid, we would have missed some news. There would have been, like, another Star Wars trailer we didn't talk about. But Neil Fisher is back.
Glad to be back. Thank you.
Yeah, and Neil, if you remember the last time he was on, is the screenwriter of Dead Girls. So we wanted somebody to talk about horror today because we're talking about Ash versus Evil Dead, which I'm obsessed with. And it has gotten me to go back through the Evil Dead series and kind of look at all how many interesting stories there are to it. And because of that, bestest friend of the show, Elliot Serrano, is here.
Howdy, howdy.
And Elliot actually wrote the Army of Darkness comic.
For a year.
So, and Steven has seen Army of Darkness and Bubba Hotep in the store with people talking.
Yes. So I am an expert.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is your 89% at work.
I'm trying, guys.
You know just about as much as the average internet commenter, so.
my opinions are valid then.
So that elevates you to podcaster right there.
That's right.
But the more I was thinking about this, Ash vs. Evil Dead premiered on Halloween, and I absolutely loved it. And Sam Raimi directed the first episode, and then I was like, well, this one's going to be great, but then where is it going to go? And then I've loved every episode. I watched the fourth episode this morning. And completely in love with it. And it just reminded me how different Evil Dead is to all of the major horror franchises. And I think the fact that it is so different is what has made it last and be vital at an age where other franchises from the 80s, like Freddy, like Jason, Texas Chainsaw Massacre in the 70s, where those seem kind of another era. Those kind of seem old, and when they were rebooted, they didn't quite hit as well. So I was wondering, from this room, what do you think it is that makes Evil Dead stand out to why we have a TV show 30 years later and comics and action figures and all of this stuff where, like, Nightmare on Elm Street doesn't even sustain that?
I think a big part of it, though, is probably the largest part of it has to be the direct involvement of Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell, who have shown not only do they understand the material and their audience, they understand production and marketing. And because they're so pragmatic about their approach, studios are willing to work with them and let them do their thing. You see properties like Jason and Freddy changing hands all the time. You don't get a consistent crew working on it. I mean, do you see the same, directors and writers from previous, Nightmare on Elm Street movies or Friday the 13th movies working on those things?
Yeah, so it's not like a singular vision like Sam Raimi's had.
Yeah, and with Nightmare on Elm Street, every time Wes Craven came back, the whole franchise would have this spike.
And it worked.
Yeah, but
right.
But he never was interested in creating eight of them.
Correct. And so being able to do that sort of thing with that particular property is the advantage to it. Now, I've seen some interviews that Campbell has said with this first season that they produced, he had the same thing you were saying. They weren't sure how some of these new writers and directors were going to work out coming in and how it would look. And he would reference like Burn Notice, He'd say, you know, some guy would come in, do an episode of Burn Notice. If we liked him, we brought him back. If we didn't, he was gone. And that we're going to do the same thing with this series, too. So I find that, again, it's a very pragmatic approach. And they know what's going to work, what doesn't work. And they know the material and the audience. You know what I'm really waiting for, though? Because it keeps sitting in the back of my mind. I'm waiting for Renny Harlin to come in to do an episode of Ash vs. Evil Dead because he worked on Burn Notice before.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he worked. He did and a couple.
He did one of the Nightmare on Elm Streets.
And he did one of the Nightmare on Elm Streets, right. And Renny Harlin's always been one of those directors that had that sensibility of it.
Right.
So I'm hoping at some point they bring him in.
That's interesting.
And then, Neil, I don't know if we talked or maybe I talked to our mutual friend Dave. He was saying the reason that, like, horror movies, there's 13 in the series or there's 10 or 9 or whatever. It's like they're really like cheap. It's easy to make horror movies, right? Or it's easier to make them than some other movies. So maybe that kind of lends like why we've had so many. Or Army of Darkness is something where it's kind of always something's in the works, it seems.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, horror for the last 50 years or more than that has been the most successful, you know, genre of film as far as, you know, return. So, I mean, that, you know, they always do well. You know, they always have the saying that, you know, the movie can be shitty, but as long as there's blood or gore, nudity, that someone's going to watch it and enjoy it.
Yeah.
And a lot of the people are watching the horror movies expecting something that is crap, and then they enjoy it because it is crap. But I think that's why Evil Dead is so successful is, you know, the first movie, I think Sam Raimi probably wanted it to be much darker and scarier, and that those comedic elements came out that he wasn't planning on with the effects and things like that. And I think that tone kind of stuck with him and, you know, got progressively funnier as the films went on. But, you know, he stuck true to his style, which, you know, not a lot of directors have the same style he does. I mean, he's even brought that to, like, Drag Me to Hell. I mean, it looks very much like Evil Dead. Yeah,
Drag Me to Hell is great.
Yeah.
And that was his return. And there's moments in Spider-Man that are very Evil Dead.
Yeah, because those were the first. I think I saw Darkman and then I saw Spider-Man. But the second Spider-Man, that entire scene where the tentacles come alive.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, I'm watching it, like, this is totally, like, shot like a horror film where it's like, you know, the tentacle knocks the guy off frame, and then the guy's hand with, like, a chainsaw comes into frame, and then goes, like, stuff like that is awesome.
Yeah.
And it's like, you'd never expect. And I think that's something you and me were talking about at the shop was, like, somebody at Sony, like, watched Army of Darkness and was like, let's get this guy to do Spider-Man. And like, dude, he did three of them, you know? And it's like, it wasn't like the superhero genre was invented then. You know what I mean? Like, they hadn't had any big successes. They had, like, X-Men. And they were like, oh, yeah, give it to that guy. And it's like, it blows my mind that that got made.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes those movies hold up. I don't think Raimi's trilogy are classics. I mean, they're not like Nolan's Batman. I don't even think they're as good as Tim Burton's Batman, but they're always very watchable.
Yeah, well, I think that really second entertaining. Spider-Man is
that
like,
second one's great. Yeah, yeah. In fact, I remember being in the theater with Renee. I think we were dating at the time, and when that scene came up, I leaned over. I was like, "Oh, he's getting to do Evil Dead now."
Yeah,
because it was all those cuts and the sound effects, and it was this language he kind of invented for Evil Dead, and they said I read, I think it's Bill Warren's book on the Evil Dead Companion. They said they basically made the first one just to get a film made, and they knew horror was the one that could get distribution.
Like, yeah, they did a short first, yeah, to get funding for it.
Yeah, and they wanted to go from that into comedy, and then they made like a crime comedy that didn't work at all, and they had to make a second Evil Dead to kind of keep afloat.
Yeah, I read a great article. It was saying that Sam Raimi and his producing partner, you know, made the short film in order to get funding, and then the first investor was a guy who ran a movie theater. And they would go and pay, I think it was like $2 for two movies, and they'd see like really crummy horror movies. And they went up to the guy and he said, I'll invest in your movie as long as the blood doesn't stop and the tempo keeps going. And I think you can tell that from the movie that it's just like as soon as everything starts, it just keeps going.
Yeah.
And never really stops, which is probably smart on their part because that's, you know, what makes a good horror movie anyway.
So. Yeah, and then they amped it up in the Evil Dead 2 is just completely just gonzo.
It's insane.
We undersell though the writing on those movies. It's really clever writing. I mean, at least it's a button pusher, but you don't feel like your buttons are being pushed.
Right.
It just keeps going and going. Like you said, it keeps going and going. It's like a roller coaster ride. And to me, I think the reason why it also works so well is without the humor, mm-hmm. it, you know, you have so many slasher movies where it's just relentless gore and death, and, you know, it's like it's depressing by the end.
Yeah.
But then with these movies, it's like, okay, you know, this is, he cracks a joke, he says things, and, you know, I kind of root for this guy too. So that gives you that little the sorbet to clear your palate to get you to the next kill.
Yeah, I right? think that's something with these movies in particular that I'm obviously not super familiar with, but I don't really like horror as a genre because it's always like all this absurd murder is going on and everyone takes themselves so seriously. And that's why I think I like these movies more is like, well, all right, this is totally ridiculous level of gore and violence, but this guy's a dope and he doesn't take himself seriously. And it's like the movie's poking fun at itself. It's like, it's kind of... It's like it gives it that level where it's like because you're not trying to be so serious all the time,
right.
It's like it's enjoyable instead of like Elliot was saying where it's like, oh, man, these two idiots in this cabin got murdered. Like, ugh. Yeah. It's just like, you know, it's like it's much more enjoyable because they're putting humor into it.
Oh, and that it is that tone where they're kind of undermining the horror formula because the first two Evil Dead movies are group of teenagers in a haunted cabin and they get killed one by one. But the way they do it is always kind of, they start to go to that formula and then they subvert it, whether because they weren't that interested in horror to begin with and they wanted to do comedy and action more, or they were just bored by horror. But things like, I can't think of any other horror franchise that's based around the guy who survives. All of these horror franchises are based around the monster. And in Evil Dead, it's about the one guy that survives, which is usually a girl.
Usually a virgin, yeah.
Yeah, and Cabin in the Woods does a great job of delineating how that works. And the girls are killed first in Evil Dead 1. And then it's two guys trying to fend themselves off from the girls that are now zombified. And just the fact that you're left with this one guy, and of course, as they keep going back to that movie, he gets dumber and dumber and less likable. I saw Armory of Darkness on a blind date. And not knowing that it was Evil Dead 3 and not had never even seen Evil Dead 1 or 2. So I'm in this movie theater in college with some girl I don't know. And I did not pick this movie. And I'm just like, what the fuck am I watching? just like, and there was that moment where when he brings the book back and he hasn't said the words and he like splashes the water on his face. He's telling people, get the fuck out of his face. and like... And they're yelling at him. They're like, you just unleashed all the demons that are going to kill us. He's like, yeah, well, just send me back home. And I remember sitting in the theater going, am I supposed to like this guy? Because I don't.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until years later, like, it came on Sci-Fi. And I was like, oh, man, this is that movie I saw on that blind date. And it just, I couldn't turn it off. And then about a month later, I had the DVD, and I was watching it once a week. And it just, because it had this tone where it doesn't tell you what it is at first. So I think once you're in it, you just kind of – it starts to change on your feet. You just decide, am I going to go with it or am I not going to go with it? And I think that's what keeps it fresh, I think, because these are movies from the 80s. I mean, Army of Darkness is early 90s, but they're basically 80s franchises in the same way that all of the Nightmare on Elm Streets were. But I don't find myself going back to Nightmare on Elm Street as much as I go back to Evil Dead.
I call that the Anchorman effect. The first time you see the movie Anchorman, you're like, what the hell is this?
I didn't like Anchorman when I saw it the first time.
I didn't either, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But then you watch it again, and you're like, okay, once you get past all the weirdness of it or the absurdity of it, it actually starts getting funnier. And then you watch it again, and it becomes even funnier.
Yeah.
And to me, what Army of Darkness does for me all the time is, again, all the one-liners. Oh, I mean, yeah. There are so many great one-liners in it. You, even when they, when I went to go see the Evil Dead musical, the musical.
Oh,
the
yeah, we just listened to the CD of that. I saw that in New York when it was on.
So when you watch, if you see the play, it's like you sit there and you go, they call it Evil Dead, but man, they lift a lot of stuff from Army of Darkness. And I'm like, there's so much about the character that they owe to that third movie.
Yep.
Because you watch Evil Dead 2. Ash doesn't have a whole lot of quippy one-liners. In fact, I can't remember any of his quips from Evil Dead.
I think he says groovy
in
Evil Dead 2.
Groovy, but that's it. Yeah. But after that, you know, come on.
Yeah, he's weird in it, though.
Are all men from the future loudmouth braggarts? Just me, babe. Just me. And that's the thing. That's what gets you. That's, again, the bit that keeps – if there's none of that, in it, I don't think it appeals as much.
Yeah, and like you're saying, the fact that it spawns things like a musical, whereas the only other horror musical I could think of is Little Shop of Horrors, which it was written by the two guys who ended up doing The Lion King, and they did that off Broadway, and it was a weird thing. And that was a forgotten Roger Corman movie that no one had really seen, and it was just like, we need to do something weird to stand out. But they created pretty much a solid, you know, well-crafted musical that got them other work. With Evil Dead the Musical, it really felt like this was an improv troupe that loved Evil Dead. And they just wanted to write songs about Evil Dead. And they had just enough money to kind of do a set of the cabin, which is why they didn't do Army of Darkness, because they couldn't possibly also have a castle and knights on their budget. And then also they... It was like a Gallagher show where they had splatter seats in the first couple of rows.
I sat in those splatter seats.
We sat a row behind. Actually, I went with Mike Drucker, who's been on the show a few times.
Did they give you guys like a tarp?
No, you had to either bring your own or you had to buy one.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm glad I brought some, because at one point there was nothing. I mean, I was like, oh, really? What a jip. People over there are getting splattered, not me. But when the big ending occurs, they just decide to unload on everyone.
That's awesome.
And it's right before intermission, because you could tell at intermission they're mopping that stage.
Yeah.
Because there's just gallons of blood.
And the floor in front of you.
Yeah.
I took a picture of it. My program got soaked with that stuff. Like,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, but just the fact that it inspires things like that. And that musical, as I said, we just put on the CD of it this week. And Renee actually did not go with me because she was pregnant, and she was like, I can't look at that much blood. But as we were listening to the CD, I'm like, well, you know the movie, so you know what part this is about.
Yeah.
And these are movies that just reward the viewing each and every time. And as the layers are exposed, you get more and more into them, to where Ash vs. Evil Dead, I think, is like now the comedy version of Walking Dead, where I don't think it would have existed if not for Walking Dead.
Yeah, yes. I was going to say, it seems like this show is getting made because Walking Dead's doing so well. So they're like, everyone's kind of looking for their niche. What do we have the rights to that we can make?
Every channel wants a horror film series. And they've been trying to do this for a long time. They remade Evil Dead a couple of years ago, which I didn't like at all, because to your point, Elliot, it didn't have that sense of humor.
Yeah, I liked the movie.
Yeah.
But... yeah, it didn't hit me. I mean, I was there going, no, they're trying to make Evil Dead. If they do another, like an Evil Dead 2 or whatever with
the girl
who I love her. I'm drawing a blank on her name. She's from Suburgatory. I can see them saying, okay, now we're gonna inject a little humor into this, because that's what the fans are gonna expect.
Yeah, but I think that was a mistake, because when you say Evil Dead as a franchise, people do think of humor. When you wrote the Army of Darkness comics, you were immediately going for humor, weren't you?
Yeah, although I was trying hard to also put in a little bit of the horror stuff, because my book was always listed under horror. Mm-hmm. And it always cracks me up, like when I go to Chimera, and you've got me like in among the adult books too.
We got rid of that section. You're in the idiot section.
All right, good. Because it was like, I don't use any language in this book. Why am I in horror? Why am I horror adult?
Blood and guts.
Yeah, but there wasn't even, well, there were some in some issues. The Al Capone issue.
Yeah.
Where Ash goes back to the Roaring Twenties and encounters Al Capone. There was a bit, but still, there is an expectation to it. You know, you say Army of Darkness. I think, to me, there's always I always make a distinction in my head between Army of Darkness and Evil Dead.
Right.
Because Army of Darkness, to me, like I say, is more like horror via Ray Harryhausen.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
They
got all the skeletons.
Yeah. Yeah, stop motion.
That stuff's awesome.
And, you know, and Evil Dead is more straight up horror, but at the end, you know, again, you have... the what did they call not the screaming Mimi, the girl who survives at the end. It's there's a term I'm trying to remember that they use, which, by the way, was Jamie Lee Curtis in the Halloween movies until she got tired of doing it.
Right.
And then people forget Ripley from Alien.
Yep.
A lot of folks forget that the first Alien movie is essentially sci-fi horror.
Yeah, and she's the one survived. Heather Langenkamp in Nightmare on Elm Street.
Right.
Who comes back in like the third one and then the seventh one.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, and that's interesting, because Army of Darkness, I just got the deluxe Blu-ray of it, and they were saying they made that as a PG-13 movie, and the ratings board gave them an R and didn't explain why. And they realized the only reason the ratings board gave them an R was because it was part of the Evil Dead series. So they were immediately like, oh, you're just a horror film. Because I actually showed it to my seven-year-old, which is, I'm either a great dad or a horrible dad. Because I was thinking about it, and he was really interested in it. And it came on Sci-Fi or AMC, and I'm like, oh, well, I'm sure this version's cut up. And I don't think it was.
So when your kid gets sent home from school because, well, little Timmy said, I'm not with these assholes. And where'd you learn that? Right.
I figured all the bad language he hears is from me frustrated with people outside of this house.
So that's why he says, I'm not with these assholes.
Yeah.
They came from dad. It didn't come from Army of Darkness. Okay.
Yeah, but if you look at Army of Darkness, it's not even that bloody. It's much,
except for
much
the
less
geyser
gory.
Of blood in the first 10 minutes of the movie.
He's covered in blood.
No, they throw that chick or the dude in
the
well.
Oh, right, there's
well,
that one geyser.
Blood just yeah. shoots out.
But like, it's so much blood that you even had to say, is that blood? Because it's red. And yeah, yeah, and he goes,
but there's so much of it from one person.
Exactly.
More than there would be.
Well, in Evil Dead 2, there's a scene, and I know, Steven, you haven't seen Evil Dead 2. There's a scene where he just gets like hit in the face with gallons of blood that come off screen.
Yeah.
And they were worried about the ratings for that. So midway through that sequence, the blood just starts changing color. And it turns green and it turns black. Just so they could say, ah, it's not all blood.
Yeah.
But they hit him with something like 5,500 gallons of blood.
Which poor Bruce Campbell has to deal with in the show, too.
Oh, yeah. They went right back to that.
There was that one episode where he's killing his store manager who's been turned into a deadite. He's like stabbing him in the neck with a broken beer bottle.
Yep.
And they show in the afterwards, like the outtakes or whatever, or the retrospective on the episode. Apparently as he was, they had the prosthetic spewing out the blood. It's going into Bruce Campbell's mouth as he's trying to do the scene and read his lines.
Yeah. But I feel like when he signs up for Evil Dead again, he knows that's going to be part of it.
You're going to have all that crap thrown at him.
Yeah. Did Xena Warrior Princess is in this show?
Yeah, she's been in it since the first episode, and this fourth episode, which aired this weekend, I think they haven't even met yet. Like her?
No, they haven't met yet.
No, she's been chasing Ash. Yeah. So we know they're gonna meet up somewhere in this.
Is she
season.
From the original?
No,
movies.
No,
just like a new character.
Which so freaking feels like stuff I did in my comic too.
Really?
I did the exact same thing with the female
sister
character.
Oh,
maybe they read your comic.
There's a lot of stuff that when I watch a show, I'm going, man, this feels familiar.
Yeah.
Man, I remember doing something like this. When I was writing the Army of Darkness book, and man, some of those lines feel familiar. I'm like, oh.
What's her character?
She plays Annie's sister, the daughter from Evil Dead 2.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So she's trying to get revenge on Ash because the pilot episode opens with Ash really high with a prostitute who wants to hear some foreign poetry, so he just starts reading out of the Necronomicon. He's like, I got some, baby. And then he unleashes all the demons again.
Yeah.
For the first time in 30 years. So now he's trying to, like, he's trying to find someone to just hit a delete spell, which is never going to work. But meanwhile, there's just more and more demons out there. So they've been trailing around. Now that the demons are out, everybody who's kind of attuned to that knows that they're back. And Lucy Lawless plays the sister of, like, the professor who originally found the Necronomicon in the Evil Dead movies.
Yeah.
And she seems to know a lot about how to combat deadites.
Yeah. She seems like she's just as well trained. It looks like she's been spending her whole life going, well, these demons that my father were researching killed everyone in my family.
Yeah.
So
I should know how to kill them if they ever.
She also knows who Ash is and hates him because she knows he's this idiot that keeps letting them out.
Her sister was the one who got stabbed in the back reading the words at the end, right? Okay.
Yeah.
The oh man, I just lost it. Oh, so if I've only seen Army of Darkness, can I watch this show and have any idea what's going on?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, the plot of Evil Dead 1 and 2 is so simple. Like,
guy opens book, reads.
They find the Necronomicon, they recite a spell, and then demons kill everybody.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, and one of the interesting things about Evil Dead was they were such low budget movies, and they were so hard to get made that each one's from a different company.
Yeah.
So they're not allowed to reference each other much. In fact, with this show, they said they would have to like pay Universal to mention anything from Army of Darkness. So they just don't. They don't
reference it at all.
They don't contradict
it. That's
right.
So it's But it's not. It's not like they've retconned it.
Yeah.
He just never mentions going through time. But I actually like that more because in the series he has a wooden hand, and I'm like, well, what happened to his robot hand? Well, he's such an asshole. He probably lost the robot hand at some point. Didn't make another one. And then he's not working at S-Mart. He's working at like Dollar Save. And I'm like, well,
wait. It's called Value Stop.
Okay.
Which again, in the comic book, I wrote. A place called Smart Stop. So it's, Value
it's
Stop,
really cool,
Smart
yeah.
Stop. I'm like,
maybe they
what?
Owe you some royalties.
I think at least a special thanks.
Yeah,
because there's so many times that I'm going, wait a minute, this sound. Oh, come on, really? I mean, maybe we were in as Warren Ellis calls idea space.
Yeah,
you know?
Parallel thinking.
Yeah. You know, we're all thinking, but I'm like, man, a lot of that sounds familiar.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that Lucy Lawless is in this and you did the Xena Army of Darkness, I'm sure they looked at that stuff. I mean, you know.
Or maybe, someone in the writer's room was a big fan, read all the comics, mm-hmm. did all the things, and then it's like, oh, well.
I like this idea.
Yeah, draw from it.
Yeah, but I also like that because they don't use S-Mart, I'm like, well, he probably just got fucking fired from S-Mart, and he had to go from, like, the Kmart to the dollar store. But so I think they did a great workaround. So he's, you know, he's not going to talk about time travel or, you know, or knights or anything. But they're all kind of separate adventures. But to your point is you don't even have to see Evil Dead 1 to understand Evil Dead 2.
Yeah.
Because they kind of remake it.
Yeah, they do a little recap in the beginning with completely different actress.
Completely different. And it's also not a group of five people. Yeah. It's just Ash and his girlfriend, and his girlfriend gets taken over by demons. So they could do all of Evil Dead 1 in like 5 minutes.
Well, you think that's like them just being like, you know, in continuity? It's like, this is how Ash just tells the stories. He's like, yeah, there are some other people there, but fuck those people. They died.
Maybe.
It's like his own personal retcon.
Yeah.
You know, that's actually not a bad way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I remember people have always said, isn't Evil Dead 2 really a remake of Evil Dead 1? Like, you finally got the budget you wanted, so you wanted to do it again. And they're like, No, they would keep insisting they were continuations. But there are all these little inconsistencies when you go from one to the next. So, and then they keep saying, well, see, you have to make Ash an idiot because only an idiot like him would keep going back to the same cabin again.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, it's the same exact cabin?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I would never go back to a place like that ever. No rational human being.
Exactly.
And like you said, he's the one who opens the book and reads out of this. Throw that book in the ocean. Forget about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think he thought he could protect it.
Yeah.
But I love the way they're playing him now that he's like in his 50s. They keep Bruce Campbell has dyed his hair like jet black for this. And at first I was like, ooh, this looks a little midlife crisis-y. But they're doing so many jokes about it that, like they mentioned, there's two young characters in this that he hooks up with, and one of them said, have you seen his pillowcase? It looks like coal.
So they're actually addressing it.
They're totally addressing it. In the first episode, he puts in false teeth and smiles.
Yeah.
He's like, he puts in a girdle. It looks like he's strapping on the chainsaw in the first shot, but he's really putting a girdle on so he can go to the bar and just like bang a slut, which is exactly what he does in the first 5 minutes of it.
That's awesome.
But really, the only thing this guy can do is fight monsters. That's all.
Yeah.
And if there's no monsters, he's not really going to do
just
anything.
Just kind of sitting around.
Pretty much.
That's kind of what makes him the badass, though, right? I mean, it's funny that you see him. And yeah, it's funny, again, you use the term midlife crisis because it's like, how many of us fanboys are watching this? And it's like putting us back in that place going, yeah, this is what I remember. Yeah, this is what I like. And that's why it's working with so many of the fans now. You know, it's almost it's almost like Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, but without being confronted by the fact that you're so freaking old, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting.
And Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back weren't as old as this.
Or even
like a 20-year gap.
Or like Clerks 2. Mm, and I remember how Kevin Smith was talking about how Clerks 2 is like these guys kind of like realizing this is how far they've gone, but they really haven't gone that far.
Mm.
And then how does it end? Oh, now they have their own convenience store? Oui. That's the most I have to look forward to.
Well, in the new episode, they show he has a flashback. He takes like this peyote to figure out like what he did to some of the demons. And they show a bunch of clips from Evil Dead 2 really quickly. Mm-hmm. And they just show 80s TV because like that's what he was watching. And there's a scene where they show him his travels and he never leaves Michigan. He just goes around Michigan because for the first couple of episodes, they shoot it in New Zealand because that's where they shot Hercules and Xena. So they have all the people down there. And obviously, in a post-Lord of the Rings world, they have a lot of facility there. So when he's driving around, he's clearly driving around New Zealand. There's like a car chase in this episode where it just looks like hobbits are about to cross the street at any time.
Wasn't there a sign that said Hobbit Crossing? And they just, it was really fast, but you'd have to catch it.
It would not surprise me.
Does he have the same car that he had in the
other? Yep, the classic that's in great. Every Sam Raimi movie. Uncle Ben's car is in. Because Stephen, you even picked it out in Army of Darkness. You're like, isn't that Uncle Ben's car?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's in every Sam Raimi movie.
I heard that before, that was like a Sam Raimi thing, was like, you always put Bruce Campbell and you always put this car in the movie.
And he's put that car in movies that have no cars.
Yeah.
So like, it's in Quick and the Dead, which was a Western he did with Sharon Stone, like covered up as a wagon. And it was in Oz the Great and Terrible. I think it was like a carriage in Emerald City. Like, he'll build it up where you can't see it's in there, but he knows it's in there.
Oh, so it's... Yeah, so it's not like you see a car driving in the background. It's like he's got it buried under shit.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, and they said this car is... It's his original car that he had in high school.
Yeah.
So they use it for Evil Dead because it was his car. But he's like kept... I don't know how he keeps it running.
Yeah, don't they like smash this car and like you... Army of Darkness?
Well, they use stunt cars for stuff. Oh, yeah. Okay. But he said they shipped that car down to New Zealand to make the series.
Yeah.
To make sure it would be the same car.
It's incredible.
And there's a great line where... During this car chase where... Ed's like, then I'm gonna destroy this car. 12 more payments and it's mine. And it's like clearly a 1978 Chrysler.
That's what's so funny about his character is a lot of times when you see these, you know, heroic characters in whether it's horror movies or action movies, you only think of them in that pod of the movie, and you're like, what would their life be? You always think that they would, you know, get a key from the mayor or go on to greater things. And it's just so funny to see a realistic guy like him who's doing, like, he's in Michigan. Doing the same thing. He works at a dollar store. I mean, it's just really funny. I love that they did that.
Yeah, it's really cool. This guy, like, traveled in time and fought, like, knights and skeletons and shit. And then he's just like, nah, now that that's over, I got fired from Kmart. Now I'm at the dollar store.
Yep. And he's fine with it.
Yeah.
Lives in Winnebago.
Because other franchises, when they've gone back to those original actors, like Jamie Lee Curtis in H2O, Heather Langenkamp in New Nightmare, it's always like they're very serious because they've been through this trauma, and maybe they're a psychologist now, or maybe they're
an author like Courtney Cox and Scream, writing big books and
trying
everything.
To put it behind them. And Ash is the same dope
he
was. And then he said, this episode, like, he goes to his dream state, and he's like, here it is, the greatest place in the world, Jacksonville, Florida. And this guy is like, why? He goes, well, I was going to take a vacation to Jacksonville, and instead I took some girl to a cabin. That's his dream. His dreams are so low.
Yeah.
That even though he has this power as an enormous monster killer, he wants to live in Jacksonville and work in a dollar store.
Gotta have dreams, man.
Yeah.
Says the guy who works in a comic shop.
He owns a comic
prison
shop.
Prison of my own design.
Well, there we go. A prison of your own design. Yeah, there we go.
It really is. So I'd like to say, we've talked maybe about like different Bruce Campbell movies and stuff.
Yeah.
But that, like, it seems to me, I was talking about this earlier at the shop today with Carm, because he's a big Bruce Campbell fan, is that like there'll be horrible movies he's in, but he's always like, he's still really good in them.
He's always entertaining.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen, I in the early 2000s, like when I got Netflix and it was just discs, I would just type in Bruce Campbell and be like, haven't seen that, haven't seen that, haven't seen that. And some of them are really bad.
Yeah.
Low budget. But he's like, he puts in, you know what? I just watched this really great documentary on Amazon Prime called That Guy Dick Miller. And you guys know who Dick Miller is? Hmm. He was in like 500 movies. He's the guy in Terminator that sells him the guns. You know, plasma rifle, just what you see, pal. He's Mr. Futterman in The Gremlins. He made 50 movies with Roger Corman. And he's been in like everything. We were IMDBing him. He was like, did five voices on Justice League Unlimited.
If you guys saw Small Soldiers, he's the driver of the truck Joe that lets him have the soldier toys.
Yeah, but he did a Deep Space Nine. He was like, he just pops up in everything. Always like a hardworking actor. And his documentary is really interesting. Just, you know, didn't take himself too seriously. Yeah, I'm working this week. I'm not working. He was cut out of Pulp Fiction, which he said that's one of his big regrets. He was supposed to play Monster Joe, who ran the junkyard.
Oh, wow.
And they shot a scene with him and Harvey Keitel negotiating the fee to get rid of the bodies. And then in the final cut, Tarantino's like, we could just jump to him with Julia Sweeney saying it's taken care of. But he had this long career of, and he would always be in these bad movies. He's in the original Little Shop of Horrors, which is a Corman film. He's in this really cool movie called Bucket of Blood, which was made a year before Little Shop of Horrors, which is also on Amazon Prime, where it's the exact same plot, except it's not a plant. He plays like a busboy in a beatnik coffee house who wants to become an artist, and he accidentally murders a cat because Roger Corman. And then he covers the cat in clay and brings it in. They're like, you're a brilliant sculptor. So he just starts murdering people and covering them with clay because he's a big celebrity. And I'm like, this is exactly Little Shop of Horrors, except he's covering them with clay instead of feeding them
to a big plant.
Yeah, but I realized watching this movie, Bruce Campbell is our generation's Dick Miller because he just pops up and stuff. He's in big movies for like 2 seconds. Like he's in every Sam Raimi movie or he's in Congo for 5 minutes or
Burn Notice.
Yeah, he like pops up in one of the Coen Brothers movies. I forget which one.
That Sucker Proxy?
Maybe.
He was in that, I think. Yeah, he was. I know he's in it, but it's it's like real, real quick.
I think like Burn After Reading or something. Like he's on a TV in one scene.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting connection is that Sam Raimi and the Coen Brothers were best friends starting out. And they all lived in the same house together.
Yeah, he was the assistant editor on Evil Dead, Joel Coen.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. And they worked on their stuff together. And the way their careers have gone have been like totally separate paths, but they've always been friends. Because, I mean, yeah, the Coen Brothers didn't make quirky dramas and off-kilter comedies instead of splatter horror movies, but they also never made anything as big as Spider-Man.
Yeah. And then didn't they say they already renewed this new Evil Dead series for a second season?
Yeah.
Right before it even aired? They were we'll take another one.
Yeah, the day before it premiered.
Yeah.
And Bruce Campbell said in an interview, he said, the fact that 15 million people watched the trailer, we got renewed on that.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So people didn't even need to watch the show. There's just such an animated fan base.
Yeah.
That, you know, I don't see... I'm trying to think where I see something like that. Maybe Doctor Who before it came back.
Well, you see stuff like this, I think, more and more. I mean, we were talking, we've said it before, Serenity's one of those where it's like, you're given enough time, that'll come back. Firefly, somebody's going to do...
No.
You don't think so?
No.
Is that kind of a Joss Whedon?
No, just not.
But
no.
They did the...
I think the cast is too old and expensive now.
Yeah, yes and no.
What's his name?
There aren't that many brown coats. Sorry.
I feel like they say that there are, but they never come out.
But
they never
do. We're talking.
And I feel like they got what they wanted. They wanted something, so we gave them Serenity.
They didn't even come out for that either.
They didn't. Yeah,
no.
They didn't.
Yeah. Well, they did. They came out opening weekend, and there wasn't enough of them to make a dent in the box office.
Because they all saw the free previews. Yeah. Why do I need to see it again? And they wanted to make a trilogy. They were talking about making a Serenity trilogy. And after the first one flopped, they're like, nah. No way.
It was funny because I think a lot of those people were praising Joss Whedon for writing full characters and then killing characters when you didn't think he was going to kill them. And then, of course, whatever happened to Wash, and then everyone hated it. And like, we're not going to support Firefly now.
Yeah.
Wow. Because it just seems like we are. I mean, what was that other show that came out? It was like Betty or something like this. Ugly Betty was like, it was gone and then it came back or something where it's like, it seems now where it's like if enough people want a thing with the internet and kickstarting and all this other nonsense, it's like, let's fucking.
That happened with Chuck, too.
Yeah, and streaming. Yeah. You and I just watched Mr. Show last week, the new season of Bob and David. That sketch show has been off for 20 years.
Yeah. And maybe that's what it is. It's people who have now grown up and either have expendable income or they're old enough where now with the internet they can get together and crowdsource this
Kickstarter,
stuff. Kickstarter. It's like you can make this kind of stuff happen. It's like, almost like inevitable.
And also you have all these streaming services which are now networks.
Yeah.
So they're looking for something that has a fan base so they can get notice. And sometimes it works, like Arrested Development on Netflix, which was not the best season of Arrested Development, but it got Netflix noticed.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it doesn't work. Like Yahoo lost $45 million on Community.
Which blows my mind.
And that season was really good. Yahoo's interface was terrible.
I was going to say, because it was on Yahoo. That's
It had no app, so you had to sit in front of a desktop. It lagged. It crashed on commercials. Mm-hmm. They released one every Tuesday. But every episode was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now CBS is going to make a similar mistake with the new Star Trek show. So.
Right, because that's going to be streaming.
Yeah.
They're going to do the pilot on the network. Although, on the one respect, I can understand that, because if you look at the history of Star Trek, Next Generation was first run in syndication when no one was doing it. Voyager launched the UPN network. So I think they're saying, well, what's the big deal we can do with this? We can launch CBS streaming.
Where's UPN now?
UPN is part of the CW.
Yeah.
So this
so it kind of exists. They have the Flash.
This new Star
that's
Trek,
a hit.
Is this supposed to be like post Next Generation?
No one knows what it is.
Oh, they haven't even said.
They just said we're doing one.
Yeah.
And Roberto Arce, who was one of the guys that worked on the J.J. Abrams movies and was one of the guys behind Lost, is...
who was supposed to be directing the new movie.
And got fired.
Got fired, yeah. Now is executive producing this one, which means it's going to suck.
Yeah, so who knows? But he was also the biggest fanboy in that room. So,
which you would think he'd understand Star Trek.
Or unless he was outvoted. I mean, you know, J.J. Abrams has gone on record going like, yeah, I like Star Wars. That's why everybody's so excited about Force Awakens. And I keep raising my hand in a lonely room going, but Star Trek Into Darkness wasn't good.
Well, and even he's thrown that movie under the bus, yeah. Talking about the story problems they had with that. But dude, you were the director. You should. I mean, the thing.
It also came from him. He wasn't the director from hire who was given the script by the studio. Right. That was Bad Robot. I mean, everybody in that room, Damon Lindelof, Roberto Arce, Alex Kurtzman,
don't
Brian Burke,
let
all Lindelof lost go. Guys, yeah. All his guys.
Yeah, but don't ever let Lindelof near your screenplay. By God, don't do it.
What, you mean Prometheus yeah. isn't good?
That's, I didn't like Tomorrowland either.
I didn't see Tomorrowland. Yeah, that was that. Lindelof?
I wanted to because I was like, oh, I'll... It looks interesting.
That was one where the when I saw the trailer, it got my interest, and I saw the trailer again, and I did not care.
Yeah.
So, what Tomorrowland does a movie end with George Clooney looking for God?
I'm sure a little bit. Yeah, you could probably pull that from it. Yeah. I mean, that's very Lindelof. Yeah, I just was so excited because I love Brad Bird's Mission Impossible movie, and I was like, oh great, he's going to go into something that's good for the family.
And I like Brad Bird doing live action. I think that's really
yeah. I thought it was great, but yeah, I don't know. I did not like it at all. It was I was excited for it because it was one of those movies where I didn't want to know anything about it, and it's very hard now like to not see trailers yeah. or commentary. And I was like, I'll just go into it clean, and I shouldn't have done it because I just
And that's yeah. that's now not good between Andrew Stanton doing John Carter and Brad Bird doing Tomorrowland. I don't think the Pixar guys are going to get a lot of live action opportunities anymore.
Did everyone here see John Carter?
The first 20 minutes.
Did you guys?
I haven't seen it, no.
I actually liked it. I watched it like 3 times.
Really?
I thought it was a good movie.
It was on Stars and I was like, let me watch it.
Yeah.
And it was like The Lone Ranger. I was like, well.
The Lone Ranger I tried. That was horrific.
I think I tried with you. I think I DVR'd it. Maybe. I think we were trying it. It was
so bad.
But it wasn't funny bad.
Yeah. No, it wasn't funny bad like Masters of the Universe.
Yeah. That's now on Netflix.
It is.
The Dolph Lundgren one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to tell you, I actually liked that movie.
I love that movie.
Yeah. I liked all right,
but
it.
Hang on.
Yeah. Okay, give reasons.
But wait. Before we do, were you guys into He-Man
yeah.
before the movie came out?
Yeah.
So you totally saw it as a child and you yeah. were like, yes, the He-Man movie.
I thought Dolph Lundgren was actually a pretty decent He-Man.
Especially for not speaking English before that
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, right? It's yeah. a second language.
That's yeah. awesome. There were so many shots of Dolph Lundgren that were obviously take 18 where he was just sick of saying those words
where
again.
Was, like,
and he was like, you could see him go, let's go.
It was funny because it was like he'd say something, but his expression wouldn't match his words. And it's like, I was like so confused watching him because it's like he'd say something that's like, you know, like, oh, we're supposed to be really scared right now. But he says it with like kind of a smile on his face.
My favorite was we were watching it in the store and a customer just walked in, looked up at the screen and went, up and at them. And
yeah.
Frank Langella is so good in that movie.
Yeah. He's trying. Yeah. He's really.
Well, he has to carry the film.
He has to. Yeah, he does. Yeah, I mean, you know, he went into it. He's like, well, I'm going to have to like Shakespeare the shit out of this movie.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yep. We were asking this question hypothetically, and Al can ask this directly to people that were children when that movie came out. So you find out there's a He-Man movie. At this point, I'm about 14, 15. I'm out of He-Man. So I didn't go. The Transformers movie hurt me deeply because it killed everybody.
Yeah, Stu was heartbroken.
Yeah, I quit Transformers at that point.
You're talking about the animated film?
Yes.
Where everyone dies in the first 5 minutes.
The G.I. Joe movie kind of did the same thing, but...
The live action G.I. Joe.
No, the animated one with Cobra La.
Okay.
They also were like... Killed a bunch of people. They're like they had the
but
same
then they
recount
there and they're like, he's okay.
That's my favorite. There was a crowd shot where they killed Duke.
Yeah.
And then they found out the reaction to killing Optimus Prime. So there's a crowd scene where you just see people like at the end of the war, there's smoke coming up and people are just standing there and somebody overdubbed, I just heard from the hospital, Duke's gonna be okay.
Yeah. But it's like the previous scene, he's clearly a dead person. Yeah. They did it in Infinite Crisis with Nightwing. There's like a panel with like dead Nightwing and then like the word balloon was like, Dick's gonna be okay. And it's like, no, he's dead.
They did that with when they Americanized Voltron. Was the first couple episodes they had Sven in the Blue Lion And then in the Japanese episode, they kill him, and then the princess takes over the blue line for the rest of the series. But there's a scene where Keith, the leader of the Red Line, is holding a dead Sven, and then they overdub in, "Get me to a hospital."
Yeah. That's all it takes. It's like you guys, you saw the movie, you were excited when you heard they were making it, and then you saw it and you were like,
And then all of a sudden we're at an empty prom with Robert Duncan McNeil and Courtney Cox.
Yeah, because Courtney Cox was really, really cute in those days.
She's cute.
She was straight from the Springsteen video.
Yeah. And Misfits of Science. It's pre-Friends Courtney Cox.
Yeah.
And pre-Voyager Robert Duncan McNeil.
Yeah.
But I just kept thinking to spend so much time with these guys trying to play rock music on a dimensional portal.
Well, the one guy, doesn't he say something like, "Oh, it's probably a Japanese keyboard."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The owner of the guitar store is very involved in that plot. He just doesn't go. We're like, we're still talking to the owner.
And the cop, that bald cop.
Oh, yeah, the principal from Back to the Future, because they couldn't get Dick Miller.
Isn't that the bald guy from Mallrats?
I don't know. Michael Rooker, isn't it? Isn't he bald? Is it? Mallrats?
I think that is Michael Rooker. I think that's Michael Rooker.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yondu.
Oh, yeah. That is. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a right. It's a weird movie.
Yeah, it's great because his character, the guy who played Strickland, I forget his name, but he's so like deep Brooklyn accent. And they're like, aren't they like Cleveland or something? Like in the middle?
I think LA, yeah. It's like Modesto or something.
Yeah. Oh, no. Weren't they in Texas?
They're in the Midwest, I think.
He clearly doesn't have the right accent.
We're naming very different regions of this country.
Well, that's maybe the problem with the movie. They're not clear where they are.
My favorite moment that the cop Strickland has is he's dealing with the owner of the guitar store who's still in this movie, and he goes, "Wait here," and leaves. And we go, "That room is on fire."
Well, he took his gun, too.
He just keeps asking people for guns.
Yeah.
I just like they include him at the end. They give him his own castle or whatever on the planet.
Oh, is that all that? See, I missed it because we were watching at the shop.
Customers came in. I had to leave.
I'm going to rewatch it on Monday.
Yeah, it's quite the movie. And they're like, people like Orko, but we can't make a guy fly, so just get Billy Barty. Turn him into Yoda. Turn him into Yoda, but miss, and turn him into Mel Brooks and Space.
So you guys did like it, to be clear. As children, you were like, this is a good movie.
I'm not flip-flopping. I enjoyed the movie.
It was a fun one. Yeah, I love that.
That's
awesome.
I enjoyed it. I think I've every once in a while I'll see it on cable where I watch it. Oh, yeah, I like it.
Still holds up.
I mean, for what it was.
Totally. Like I said,
the studio did go bankrupt in the middle of it.
Right.
Like
that's probably why it takes place in some nondescript Midwest town.
Well, also why a scene clearly written to take place at a prom is now written to take place at two people in an auditorium setting up for a prom. Because it was like, what if we had no extras?
Well, I think they were supposed to overdub Dolph Lundgren, too, and they ran out of money, so they couldn't. So they said a deal with his voice.
Oh, wow.
Which, I mean, this
which
is the
helped
charm
him because he got, yeah, because then he had an acting career afterwards. He played the Punisher.
Yeah, he's still working.
And Expendables.
Yeah.
And that Punisher actually wasn't bad, too.
It wasn't bad at all, yeah.
Yeah, that was a pretty
considering
good
considering the other ones that did get released.
I didn't mind the Thomas Jane Punisher. I thought that did a lot better than people give it credit for.
It's an episode of Miami Vice.
And it takes place in Florida.
Yeah.
But if you forget that.
How can you forget that? John Travolta's walking around in Florida for the entire movie.
He's terrible.
If you forget that, you're reminded of it 30 seconds from now.
Different movie.
When John Travolta walks across the beach. I actually liked Punisher Warzone, which was
fuck that movie.
Oh, it's like zombie violence, but human beings are doing it.
It's so dumb.
The only thing I don't like is that, Julie Benz is starting to fall for the Punisher, and I'm like, you watch this guy massacre your husband and everyone around you.
It's bad writing, man.
An hour ago.
Well, if James Bond can, you know, bang Monica Bellucci in the first 20 minutes of the movie after killing...
After her husband's funeral?
Yeah, anybody can do it. And you know who else could do it? Bruce Campbell.
And I think to your point about Walking Dead, too, about why this show is so popular is just that juxtaposition. Walking Dead's in such a point now where it's so down and so depressing that having that little, comedy light coming at you with Evil
Right.
Dead.
It's like a palate cleanser.
Yeah, very much so, yeah.
And I love that it comes on the day before just to prep you. Well, you were just tweeting about Walking Dead.
I hate that show right now.
It's so bleak. And that's the thing. It's like a really hard show to do. And it's kind of weird that they're like, we're going to do a spinoff show. That's the same show. And it's like, well, it's like, how many shows can you make about zombies? And at least Army of Darkness is doing, or Ash vs. Evil Dead, where it's called, is doing something different, where it's like they're monsters, or they can go different directions, or it's
They're conjuring demons. Yeah,
yeah, it's very comedic instead of like, well, I mean, Walking Dead is never going to be anything other than this bleak thing. It works as a comic because when it comes out, you buy 4 other comics that are widely different. That's like your one horror comic.
That's also like my complaint with Gotham, which I will not quit because I just hate watching it every week because Batman's tangentially involved.
Okay.
Is that they've Gotham now, we're in season 2 and they've created this world that's horrible and everyone's horrible. And it's just this grand guignol now of like people slashing each other in the face all the time and blood spurting everywhere. And it makes you realize why Gotham City needs Batman is because everyone else in Gotham City is terrible.
Yeah.
And then you have Commissioner Gordon, who's just frustrated that he can't do anything about it. So then to make a show about a city that needs Batman and then not put Batman in it.
Yeah, it has to wait another 15 years for Batman to get his shit together.
Yeah, I'm like, who am I rooting for on this show? And when it was Gotham Central, which is kind of how the show started, when you read Gotham Central, you're like, well, where's Batman? Oh, Batman's over here at the bottom of my pile in 5 other Batman comics that month.
Yeah.
But now we're in this world where there's no Batman at all. And I find that like as bleak as Walking Dead. I still enjoy Walking Dead because they keep looking at, now they're looking at society from different angles with Alexandria and things. I did not like Fear the Walking Dead, but Ash vs. Evil Dead is my favorite show on now. Ash vs. Evil Dead has made me stop missing Constantine.
Well, to my problem with The Walking Dead is that it pretty much asserts the assholes will inherit the earth.
Yeah.
You know, the society turns into a bunch of assholes when the shit hits the fan.
Yeah.
Whereas in Ash vs. The Evil Dead, Ash is an asshole.
Right.
But we like him.
Yeah.
He's like a likable asshole.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like The Walking Dead is like, and they say in the book, I'm sure they mentioned in the show by now, it's like, the zombies aren't like the real threat in that show. You can fight a zombie and run away from a zombie. It's like, it's all the other crazy people who aren't zombies that are the real problem. Like, those are the people you have to worry about.
Right, and yeah, and now we're in season 6 of The Walking Dead. Everybody who survived on The Walking Dead knows how to kill zombies.
Yeah.
So they're like, there's a zombie, and then they go kill that zombie. Yeah. Unless they sneak up on them, which is also why they introduced Alexandra and a bunch of people that have never killed zombies before.
Right.
There's no reason why there should be this many zombies still this late in the development of the show, in a narrative of the show.
Well, they said it's like one, they said the living humans are like 1 to 10,000 people, because the mass plague like wiped everybody out. Right. Yeah. Billions
but
of
how
people.
Long can so zombies, zombies live, though?
And that's, I've always had that problem. Did you guys ever read World War Z?
I saw the movie.
The movie.
Like, I read Zombie Survival Guide.
Completely different. And it's basically the same thing. Is you're reading this book and it's like, yep, zombies, they took over. They pushed humanity to the brink of extinction. There's 30,000 people left or whatever, but it's like, how? Like, if you can, one dude can kill 10 zombies on his own, and there's how many people on the planet? You know what I mean? It's
well,
like,
here's my problem. Here's my problem with zombies, and I want somebody to explain this to me. Zombies eat people because there's pure instinct. There's no brain left. They, you know, they don't do anything with the people they eat.
Right.
Like, in Zombie Survival Guide talked about, like, they can't even digest because their digestive system doesn't work.
Nothing works.
But they're just eating to eat. Why don't they eat each other? They're walking like with hundreds of zombies. You think it just is, if they're eating animals, which on Walking Dead they do,
yeah,
they eat anything that crosses its path.
I think they're eating anything that isn't diseased. That's kind of like, but they do that in the World War Z movie where it's like, well, they won't eat sick people, which I think I was only in the movie. I don't know that that's in the book.
No, it's, I don't know.
But I think it's something where it's like, well, you know, it's like, why don't lions eat other lions? Like,
How do zombies survive in the north where freeze? Where
well, that's
freeze.
In the book they say they freeze, and in the springtime they thaw out.
Yeah.
So then why not, when everything freezes, everyone who survives get out and start pop, 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 pop,
right,
wiping out the
zombies?
Well,
it's also set in Atlanta, so it's not freezing too often.
So in other words, the north says, screw the south.
The north are in igloos going, boy, that was bad.
Yeah. And then, you know, well, they're red states, so screw them.
Hey. They're literally red states.
Yeah, literally.
You didn't want any help from us before. So.
But you know, that's the thing about zombies. Zombies, like vampires, they always create all of these rules, but the rules are not universal rules. You know, we're watching the Italian movie Zombie, which I'd never seen. I've been wanting to see it for like 5 years, and it came on LRA this weekend. And I was watching it, and Renee came home, and and we were getting really frustrated with the people because they're just dropping like flies, and we're like, and they keep shooting zombies in the chest, and then the zombies eat them, and we're like, why don't they shoot them in the head? I'm like, because there's no rules.
Yeah,
it's just like,
and we think
we
that
know
because...
that because we've been watching Walking Dead, and we've been watching, you know, George Romero. But the rules are all over the place. And Evil Dead, for example, Evil Dead breaks its own rules all the time. In Evil Dead 2, Ash gets possessed by a demon, and then he's fine. He gets possessed
by a demon.
He goes
back and forth a lot. Yeah,
yeah, and then, mm-hmm. then in the second episode of Ash vs. Evil Dead, they go to the young girl's mother who came back from the dead. And she's played by Mimi Rogers, who's really actually great in the episode. And Ash is just a total dick to her completely.
It's really great.
Yeah.
I mean, the worst family dinner ever.
Yeah. He's sitting at the family dinner with a shotgun and his chainsaw, and she's like, Why don't you put the gun down? Oh, you'd like that, wouldn't you, sister? It's like, yeah, I'd like to have a meal without a shotgun.
Yeah.
and then he's like interrogating her to prove that she's real or something. And he's like, you like to go fishing? What do you like to do? What's your first name? And then the father's like, I like to go fishing. This isn't about you, Dad. And then he ends up, he just punches her right in the face. And she gets up as a demon. He goes, oh, good. I was starting to feel like a dick. But in that episode, he's like, your mother's dead. She's turned into a demon now. We have to cut her head off. And I kept thinking, you were turned into a demon.
Yeah, that does kind of play to his character, though. Wouldn't it? Like, well, don't cut my head off, but yeah. We're cutting her fucking head off.
But he gets turned into a demon when he's unconscious, because he gets knocked out, comes back as a demon, and then wakes up, and he has that scene where he changes back, and Annie doesn't believe him and keeps chasing him with an axe. He's like, I'm all right! And then the axe comes at him anyway. You need to see Evil Dead too.
Yeah.
And then an Army of Darkness, where he's possessed yet again, and then he splits off into a
that little thing that head grows up.
The eyeball, and then it turns into the
So
good Ash and bad Ash. And then he chops him off completely, cuts his head off.
Mm-hmm.
But then when he doesn't say the words, it reassembles into evil Ash with the skull helmet.
But again, that's, you know, you play with the rules. Again, that whole thing with the evil, them turning good, bad, and there's a bit where the Mimi Rogers turns human again to keep the daughter. And they're going, I did that in one of my comics. What?
You got to make some phone calls. Well,
but that's also in Evil Dead 2.
It's in Evil Dead 2 and 3,
The grandmother in the basement turns back and starts singing. Yeah. She sings the same song.
Oh, that's
right. She sings like Hush Little Baby, Don't You Cry, which also sings in Evil Dead 2.
I played a lot with that in the comics too, and I don't know if anybody realized that they were going, how do you do that? I go, oh, they did it in the movies.
Yeah. Now, when you were doing the Army of Darkness comics, they said one of the problems with Evil Dead is those separate licenses. Yeah. I was talking to Nika on Twitter, because Nika announced that they have the license for Ash vs. Evil Dead action figures.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed the demon that has like no eyes and the vibrating red mouth. And I asked them, hey, would you do an Ash box set and re-release your Ash from Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness and now the new series? They have like an Ash through the years. And they said, no, we can't do that because of the multiple licenses. Mm-hmm. When you were doing Army of Darkness, did they say anything about you can't do things from Evil Dead 2?
Yep. Actually, in the anniversary, there were two bits that came up. One during the series and then in the anniversary issue where I wrote the little 10-page Ash Beyond story, where it's like reimagining the Evil Dead movies in the future. And at one point, I have Ash in the series, I have Ash visiting the cabin and encountering one of his old selves. And I remember when I saw the pages, I mean, Dietrich Smith, who was my artist for a bit, nailed it perfectly. He captured Ash from the end of Evil Dead 2. And I got notes back saying, can't do that. It's too much like Evil Dead 2. We can't do that. I'm like, but that character actually appears in the beginning. That version of Ash appears in the beginning of Army of Darkness. So I thought, you can put that in. No, can't do that. So there were certain things that you just could not do. Another thing, too, in that story, I have Ash, we explain how Ash loses his hand and gets a robot hand in the future.
Right.
So he has a regular hand through most of the movie, but then they said, no, you can't do that either, because Ash with the robot hand is what makes his character in Army of Darkness. So I couldn't do a bit where he loses his hand and gets a new one. He had to always have that hand from the beginning. I was like, oh, okay.
That's so frustrating.
It is frustrating, yeah.
I was talking to the guy, I think IDW does Ghostbuster comics, and we talked to the guy at the convention a couple years ago, and you know, we've got the book on the shelf and it's nothing crazy, but we were flipping through his art and he's nailing the likenesses of the four Ghostbusters like perfect. I'm like, why doesn't the comic look like this? Like, the comic doesn't have likenesses that are this good. He's like, oh yeah, I get notes all the time. They said, all right, Venkman looks too much like Bill Murray. You got to change it. And he has to draw off. He can't draw them to look that much like the actors. There's like some ratio where they're like, yep, it's too close. You got to change this panel.
Yeah, there's some fine lines. I remember back Palisades was doing the Muppet Show action figures, and they wanted to do Kermit, Reporter Kermit, and the trench coat with the little microphone. And they picked a sketch from the Muppet Show where he was on like the planet Coosbane, and they, as the accessories, they put like the little Muppet aliens. And Children's Television Workshop said, you have to take his hat off. And so, because if he has a hat, that's the Sesame Street Kermit.
No, that's
because like the Muppet Newsflash Kermit when he would talk to Little Red Riding Hood. And they were like, but we also did it on the Muppet Show. He's like, no, we own that Kermit. And they had already done like seven Kermits because it was the Muppet Show.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's that specific clear line. And, you know, as we said, when we talked about like Marvel Studios, like, why do they have the Inhumans and not the Skrulls? And it's like, you know, there's lawyers just talking about that for weeks.
Yeah, which is hilarious to me. Well, we own the wizard. It's like no one gave a shit about the wizard 10 years ago. Now these guys in suits are arguing over a character like comic book nerds.
Yep.
Well, luckily, Indiana Jones Kermit gets to wear a fedora.
Yeah, my 2-year-old has Indiana Jones Kermit, and the paint has rubbed off one of his golf ball eyes, and... There are many toys in this house where I just go, they're toys they're meant to be played with. They're toys they're meant to be played with.
It's a mantra you have to repeat to yourself.
Yeah, Scooter came back to me with one eye. It was this Cyclops Scooter.
Poor Scooter.
And like I just looked down. Everything was quiet now, so I looked down and I just heard, broken. I looked down, Scooter had an eye. So then downstairs I have these mutilated figures in Gorilla Glue. Like when everyone's out of the house, I was like, I don't know, 50 things. These things are worth like $50 each. Because Palisades is completely out of business. And they went out of business when they did the Army of Darkness figures.
And you know who else could play Scooter really well?
Bruce Campbell. Well, we're at an hour. I'm so glad you guys came down. I felt like you were totally the right guys to talk about this. Going around the room, Neil, how can we find you and what are you up to?
You can find me on Twitter at Fishface. It's FISCHFACE. I'm a little away from film. I've been doing commercials, starting to direct commercials, which is a lot of fun. Moving toward that, it's just much busier. Doing that, and then developing this one web series I'm really excited about. It's been about 8 months of development and getting closer. I don't want to give too much away, but it's going to be about 36 episodes. One season is going to have one story and have a beginning, middle, and end. It's called Who Killed Heather? So it should be pretty fun.
Oh, cool. Elliot?
Yeah.
Find me on Twitter at Elliot Serrano with 2 L's, 2 T's, and 2 R's. Likewise on Instagram. I have a Facebook page, which is open. I am in the middle of writing the Grumpy Cat comic with a number of other writers. So you'll see the issue two came out, issue 3, 4. And I mean, Grumpy Cat's going on for a while. So you'll see me on Grumpy Cat for a
bit. That's an ongoing?
That's, it's a series of series. So I'm doing that. I've been asked to work on another property that we haven't announced yet. I will be back at C2E2. They've asked me again to host some stuff.
Oh, you're moderating panels?
Moderating more panels.
Well, and you're going to be at TARDIS, aren't you?
And I will be at Chicago TARDIS. Yeah, that's nice. Moderating some of that stuff, too. So that should be fun. But
I think I'm on something at TARDIS. So they asked if I was available for panels, but I didn't get a confirmation. But last year I was actually on panels and I never got a confirmation.
No, that can happen.
Yeah, that can happen. So I'm going to if I'm there... I'll let you know.
I'm going to go to the Force Awakens panel and just sit down because Tony Lee ain't going to kick me off that panel.
Nah.
I'm just going to go ahead and go, dude, I'm here. Sorry.
Tony Lee's good on panels, too. I saw him at TARDIS years ago.
That's how actually I first really got started with panels is Tony Lee. He's a great guy. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, you can follow me at Not On My Book on Twitter. That's the podcast feed. You can like our Facebook page. That's kind of our news feed. Caffeinated Comics at Facebook. You can listen to us on Stitcher, on iTunes, or go directly to the source, caffeinatedcomics.blogspot.com, where you can find all, I don't know, 147 episodes of the show, always free. Just keep hitting the older entries tab, and you can hear what we thought about Star Trek Into Darkness. the week it came out. We liked it.
We loved it. I still watch that movie.
We were in the five guys in that mall going, no, it's good.
And a smash burger.
Yeah, which is why now we wait a day or two until we review a movie. And Steven.
You can find me at Camaras Comics, 19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that, meatball!